Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 86 of Classic Elite. I'm Scott, and I'll be hosting this week, and I'm joined by Vogue Nasty, who I call Dustin. Vogue Nasty, I don't know, man. It's just too many syllables for me.
Yeah,
and, oh, that sounds terrible. And and we have the Gooch, who I call Josh. What's going on, man?
Same old, same old. I fought really hard not to use the that's what she said phrase. So just be known that I'm a classy guy, and I don't say crap like that. Damn it.
You filter it. You think it, but you filter it. So big ups to you. Well, guys, we have a really cool episode this week on Classic Leap. We have a fantastic interview lined up. We brought on Laura by Spruik. So I don't know, here maybe about 20 minutes or a half hour from now, we will be airing a really, really cool interview. They released their video for Armchair Girlfriend today off the album Katana and Tonic. You may remember the review that I put up about that album, and you may remember the Corridors of Time Chrono Trigger song that I played on the podcast. So now you'll get to hear the masterminds behind that music, which is really cool. And we don't have much with gaming news, so we're going to talk a lot about what we've been doing gaming-wise and stuff like that this week, or the last 2 weeks. It's been about 10 days since we recorded, so we've got a lot to go over. We have a lot of comments from the last episode, finally, which is awesome, so we'll be covering some of that. And before we jump into news, we're going to remind you to check us out at Gaming 2.0, that's G2PO.com. As well as use our promo code CLEAT at a couple different places for discounts at DoghouseSystems.com, J2Games.com, and also Epic Vessel Games. Put in the code and see what kind of savings you get. All those places will give you money for using our code, which is cool. Well, guys, as far as gaming news, it's been a little while. Is there anything that either of you guys want to get to before we talk about the unfortunate death that's been going along our news feeds lately?
No.
Nothing?
Yeah, PAX happened.
Oh, PAX, yeah. Well, I guess we can talk about that a little bit then. Anything jump out to you PAX-wise? Gooch?
Not to me specifically. I just, you know, listened to a bunch of people talk about their impressions of this and that, but it's all games we already knew were coming out anyway, so I mean...
Yeah, there wasn't any breaking news or anything like that. I really enjoyed all of the independent press coverage that I listened to. Like the For Love of the Gaming podcast, they had some really cool stuff. It was their first time at a convention. So it was really cool to listen to them talk about their experience at PAX and relate a little bit to, on a much smaller scale, what Tony and I dealt with at GlassCon, not having a clue what we were doing, so... I really enjoyed a lot of the coverage, but there wasn't really anything new that came from it. If you guys were going to go to any convention, E3, PAX, whatever, Dustin, like, which one would you go to?
Oh, E3, hands down.
E3?
Yeah.
Gooch, what would you go to?
Yeah, I would. If I could choose one and one only, E3 would be like, you know, it's the biggest. Why not go there?
Really? Oh, see, I think I would do MAGFest. Or PAX. I think I would want to go to one of the... Well, MAGFest is really small relative to the other choices, but I think I'd rather go to a PAX might be the biggest that I'd want to go to. I just hear horror stories about E3 where everyone's just like grumpy press people, always like late and behind, and like nobody enjoys it. And then in like PAX or MAGFest, I just picture people having like a really, really good time and not worrying so much about like getting content and news out.
But, that's why we would be there, and we would be that ray of sunshine.
we'd be the ones there enjoying it. Like, yeah. Ah, screw it, we got in. That was our goal. No coverage. Well, it's more like our press coverage. If we were at E3, I would just be like, hey, follow everybody else on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's where all the news comes from. So. Yeah, well, I guess other than PAX, there's nothing else that really jumped out to me. What about you, Dustin? Anything?
Other than the other bullets on our dock, then no.
Yeah, no. I did want to talk about the founder of Commodore, the guy that made Commodore 64, Jack Tramiel. He passed away, and... He's like a really, polarizing person in gaming, because the Commodore 64, some people argue, is the greatest video gaming platform ever. And Jack Tramiel is also credited with killing Atari, which I did not really know that before he had passed, and I heard other people talking about it. Did you guys have any idea that he was the one that decided to try to move Atari away from games into being more of a personal computer?
I thought I remembered him hating video games.
That's the impression that I got from other people talking about it.
Yeah, but I forgot about him being involved with Atari.
I guess it's just really ironic considering that a lot of game makers cut their teeth with programming on the Commodore 64.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's a big reason why we have the games that we do. That's funny. But it's really interesting. Commodore is a brand that we like on the show a lot. Tony especially. He's very nostalgic. That was the first gaming system computer that his family ever had. We had the CTO of Commodore USA on the show, which is really good. So it's just something that's newsworthy, especially for retro gamers. Gosh, in the Atari community, he's really not a very well-liked person, but and I can see why. You know, he killed something that they really didn't like. Or at least that's the impression I got anyways. Gucci, got any thoughts on that?
Not really. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not going to sit here and argue about, you know, what he did or did against, you know, that sound right. What he did for or did against the industry, you know, whether or not, you know, I should hate him if I'm a fan of Atari or not. But, I mean, he was a significant figure, you know, in terms of gaming history and where we are today. Played a big role in that. It's sad to see someone go. I mean, always. So.
Yeah,
just today, I'm sure everyone's aware Dick Clark passed away.
I know. And I freaked out. This sounds really sad. Like, it worked. And I was like, oh, man, Dick Clark died. He's the guy that came from Ashland, you know, which is where I'm from. No, I was thinking Chuck Woolery. But still, really sad. Really sad. I feel like such a dumbass at work today when I mentioned that. So,
yeah, you way to know the local history.
Yeah. I mean, there's a street named after him. Yeah. Anyway.
Chuck Woolery. He's the video game host, right?
He was the
Love Connection?
No.
Yeah, wasn't he? I don't know. I got him mixed up with Dick Clark, so I should not be commenting anything on what that guy did in his career.
Yeah. Well, no, Chuck Woolery did one of the dating ones, for sure. But I don't think he was a Love Connection guy. I don't remember. Oh, well, if anybody does know the answer to that, any of our listeners, write us in at classicelite@gmail.com so we don't have to Google it. We'll read it next show.
Oh, and man, he's been all over the place, according to Wikipedia.
Chuck Woolery?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. I got to Google image him. Okay. Let's see here.
It's crazy. Dick Clark died.
Oh, no, that is Love Connection.
Chuck Woolery's Google traffic went up like crazy.
Chuck Woolery trends because Dick Clark died. Oh, crap, who am I thinking of? Not Chuck Woolery. All right, well, I guess moving on from terrible 80s and 70s references. Dustin, you said that there's a new podcast at Got Game?
Yeah, they just released their first episode over at gotgame.com, and I figured we'd give them a shout-out since they are one of our...
They help us out. We'd syndicate there, so heck yeah.
They host
you listened
stuff.
To it, right?
I did. It was pretty good.
What kind of gaming or what kind of games or genres did they cover?
It was kind of off the top of my head. It was kind of a just your normal what you've been playing, kind of current gen.
Oh, current gen. Did they talk about any older retro stuff?
Off the top of my head, I don't think so, but it has been a few days since I listened to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a couple hours, too, I'm sure. So, do you remember if there was much PC talk, or do you feel like it was a lot of current-gen stuff, kind of similar to our show?
Yeah, I remember specifically console stuff.
Cool, very cool. I heard some interesting, not related to Got Game, but... have we talked about the Steam console at all on this podcast? The potential for it? I think, did we have a discussion about that?
I think we mentioned it.
I'm really interested by the potential of that. So, I guess we won't talk about the potential Steam console thing. But I really do hope that PC gaming could come out to the living room as a console version. It'd be great if we could get the firmware updates and the patches and stuff, really easily, through like a console form. So, Dustin, I see your next bullet point here with the Retro League, and I was listening to their last episode, which they recorded with Google Plus. And they mentioned that they're going to be trying out Google Plus to potentially do some live caller participation, right?
Yeah.
Now, what else do you know about that as far as like time frame, what the goal of that is?
I know, I saw a Facebook post and they said it was going to be 2 weeks from, I saw it on the 14th. So they usually record on Sunday afternoon / evening around like in between 2 to 6.
Yeah.
And then they said they were going to do a Q&A, a live Q&A afterwards. So I would assume that would be somewhere around, I don't know, somewhere in between 6 and 7.
Yeah. And that's Eastern time when we're saying 6 and 7 Eastern Standard Time.
Yes.
Some pretty, because I think Rob's like Mountain Time, and I'm pretty sure Hugh is Central Time. Yep. Yeah. So, that's awesome. I love the idea of using a Google Plus or Google Hangout to allow people to participate with the podcast live like that. I would love to steal that idea. If we could consistently pick a time, maybe we could do that. But what's the fun in that?
Well, one of these days.
One of these days. Yeah, that would be, I'm gonna do my best to go to that. That would be really cool to participate. Their forums are so active that I hope there's a really big turnout for their Q&A.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love their forums. They're good stuff. They're one of my favorites to, just browse through. You get really cool discussions. Like they were talking on their most recent podcast about a nice old school argument between, Super Nintendo and Genesis hardware. It's like, ah, oh, great. Only us, you know, 30-year-olds can actually enjoy that kind of an argument anymore. It's good stuff. Well, is there any other gaming news that we should get to? Gosh, I feel like we're missing a ton, but I guess it's not really that big of a deal.
We could talk about Mass Effect 3 for an hour and a half.
Yeah, again.
I'm down.
Yeah, Dustin, I still don't know what we're talking about, so let's spoil it more.
Everybody dies.
Your choices are bad. Well, cool. I guess, Dustin, man, what have you been playing this week?
A whole lot of stuff. I played Shenmue 2 for review, and it's essentially, have you guys ever played Devil May Cry?
Nope.
A little bit. Yeah, I played the third one.
It's like 2D Devil May Cry, where it's like you have all these different weapons and each weapon kind of handles differently and it causes different amounts of damages to different enemies and they all have their different combos and you can switch them all up pretty rapidly. So you can end up with all these like really interesting combos and it all looks really cool and it's all the really sharp hand-drawn animation.
Yeah, I love the art style. I know I've talked about Shank 1 before. Venture Brothers is one of my favorite shows ever.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and this looks like Jackson Publix did the artwork for it. So, yeah, I love it. Did you play Shank 1 at all?
I played the demo, but I didn't get
it. Just the demo. Yeah. I'm really interested to see if there's any gameplay improvements or if it is just strictly a continuation because Shank 1 just felt a little short. Like, I wonder if Shank 2 is just like more like Episode 2 where it's kind of the same thing.
I think that pretty much across the board, everyone has said that Shank 2 is better than the first one. So
really? Yeah. There is multiplayer with this one. Online multiplayer co-op, I think. At least in Steam there is. Which is cool. They didn't have any co-op in the first one.
Yeah. So it's good. It's super, super violent. You can... Like, just the stuff that you can do. You can jump on dudes and beat their head into the ground.
Yeah. You can do really good juggling, too.
Yeah. You can... There's all kinds of stuff. It's awesome.
How many hours did it take you to get through the campaign? Or, I guess, the game, I should say.
I would say around 6 to 8.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, somewhere around there. There was, I think, 10 to 12 missions that you could play.
Oh, well, the first one was probably 2 to 3 hours.
Oh, okay. Wow, yeah. It's significantly longer then.
Oh, very cool. Well, I might have to check that out. I think I'm going to wait for that to do a Steam price drop or sale.
Yeah, that's I got it for free off PlayStation Plus, so. I've also been playing Cannibalt, which is a I don't remember if it started as a Flash game, but it started as like a like this independent, like try to make a game in 5 days. You guys ever hear about that, like a game jam almost?
Yeah.
It started as a concept for one of those, and it was available on iPhones first. And then now you can download it as a PlayStation Mini, and it's pretty fun. It's your little guy runs automatically, and all your control is whether or not, or is you tap a button and he jumps. That's the only control you have.
The Impossible games like that.
Yeah, it also reminded me a lot of Bit Trip Runner, but I think Bit Trip Runner is better.
What did you think of Cannibalt? It's free, right?
Yeah, it was free for from PlayStation Plus again, and it is pretty fun. It lacks the really good controls that you would get from a touchscreen, which is kind of weird to say, because you really have a hard time judging how far you're going to jump by how hard you're pressing the button. So making some of those really midway jumps were really hard.
Gotcha.
And if you play it on a big screen, it will make you want to vomit. Because it's just this like ever scrolling gray buildings with the windows, and it's just like this constant pattern and over and over and over. I played it for like 19 minutes straight and almost chunked it. It was pretty bad.
I don't think I've heard anybody say chunk it in a really long time either.
Let's see. What else did I play? Fez. I played some Fez. I didn't get far enough into it to talk about it in depth. My wife actually, we saw it when we went and saw Indie Game the Movie. She went with me. And, let me backtrack. Cannibalt, the music was made by the guy from Team Meat, now that I'm thinking about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Not
Edward.
No, the guy that did the music's like Danny Barkowski or something like that.
Yes, that's him.
Yeah. He's really, really talented. I'm a really big fan of him. So the music in Cannibalt must be incredible.
It's pretty good, yeah. There's like 4 tracks you can choose between.
Nice. Yeah, Danny Barkowski's awesome.
See, I'm like Fez. Yeah, my wife and I went and saw Indie Game the Movie, and she saw Fez, and she thought it'd be cool. And I bought it, I think, release day or the day after, and she was playing some of it. And she really enjoyed it, but sitting and watching it just made me want to play it even more. So
yeah,
eventually,
I guess
she handed over the controller, and I got to play a little bit.
I mean, I loved it. It's not an exciting game at all. It's a satisfying game, but there's not any enemies or anything. You just kind of explore.
Yeah.
And listening to the guys at the Giant Bombcast talk about Fez, I feel like I haven't even played the game yet.
Yeah, no, same here.
It really truly feels like, from my understanding, like Fez is a really cute, like platformer, clever, optical illusion type of game. It's very satisfying to solve the puzzles, and it's very cute and fun to look at. But it sounds like after you quote unquote beat the game the first time, that's when things like really, really open up. You get different abilities, and you can get to different areas. And I'm really disappointed in my review now because I only talked about like the gameplay.
No.
And like some of the Easter eggs and stuff. So I don't know, I feel like I need to go back and maybe do another review, but it's addicting. It's fun. It is only an indie title. So I guess for me, I don't know if it'll ever get to that mind bending, you know, mind blowing part that, who was it? Was it Jeff on Giant Bomb? I think he was the one that had his, like, mind really blown by Fez.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll get to that. Maybe because I won't understand. I'll miss, like, a lot of that depth that's in the game. Or maybe I won't be able to play it for enough hours. But I don't know if it's going to be... if you go and hear me talk, and Dustin talk about the Giant Bomb cast, and you hear Jeff talk about it, it sounds like it's the best thing that's ever been made, ever. And it's not.
Or the most frightening thing. He was kind of... the way he was talking about it, he was saying... What did he call it? He said it was, like, the... everyone at Polytron's like collective madness, everyone like slowly going mad or something like that.
Yeah. It's like scary to him, like their level of like insanity and genius. Because honestly, when you're trying to play Fez, if you try to think about how they actually figured out the idea of shaping the world that way and the gameplay to work the way that it does, mm-hmm. It's really tough to wrap your mind around. It's like Escher, like how the hell did he draw a hand drawing a hand with no ending or stopping point? You know, how does he have all the stairs go upwards, but they're connecting, like all that kind of, that's what Fez all is.
Yeah.
But then it's just fun to like collect little blocks and the sounds are neat and it's weird, but I'm pissed. I feel like I really need to do like another Fez video, like 20 hours later into the game.
Yeah. We need to like do a marathon or something.
That's what we could do. We should do a live stream of Fez.
Fezathon.
That'd be cool. So yeah, man. Do you think how far do you think you'll get to Fez? Do you think it's one that you're going to be able to really get through a lot of it? Do you want to get through a lot of it?
Yeah, I want to just invest as much time as possible into it now that I've heard them talk about it.
Yeah, it just sounds. What sucks is the the initial impressions that it makes me feel like it's a game that I'm going to love more than you. And the further along we get into the game, that's totally going to flip-flop. You'll be like, oh, man, but I'm collecting all this awesome stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I want to go platform some more. I just started a new game. So cool, man. What else have you been playing?
A little Halo Reach with John from John's Game Channel and Tony. It's fun most of the time when I'm not getting... absolutely slaughtered by 13-year-olds.
Oh, you suck too?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I am not good at the first person multiplayer shooter, but for some reason I'm actually adequate at the third person shooters, which is really weird. I don't understand that.
That is weird.
But yeah, like Call of Duty and Halo, I've never been good at them, so.
That makes me feel better, because I view you as a really good gamer. And if you stink at those, I don't feel so bad anymore. It's like, okay, good. I can be a decent gamer and suck at first-person shooters.
Do you guys have trouble with analog controls? Like,
yes.
Do you have trouble with... I think it's us growing up with... We only had the digital. You know, you're either hammering on the button and you're running as fast as you can, or you're not, and you're not moving. Yep. So for me, it's really hard to...
I have no touch.
Yeah, it's either I'm all the way on or I'm all the way off. And yep. I think that if you grew up with analog controls, I think you're probably at least a little more adept with them than us older gamers.
Yeah, well, I think part of it too, especially for me, I got out of gaming for a while. Like the two sticks thing, there's a whole gameplay mechanic and coordination that I'm not really used to. So I'm surprised that you have the same struggle, because you didn't stop gaming. Like, you've always had current consoles.
But I tell you what I do, is I will often find myself transitioning when I need to make, really small corrections with my right analog stick. I will use my left thumb. Like, I will cross over and do those tiny little maneuvers and then go back and to a normal hand placement.
What you'll actually like, you'll take your hand, your left hand from the left side of the controller to the right side of the controller?
Yeah, because my right thumb just doesn't know how to do that.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I mean, it's... I feel that way. I feel like I've got two left feet or left hands or whatever, so... I'd have to start doing that. I used to, for Tiger Woods, I used to position the controller between my knees so that I could get, like, the right, like, tapping.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, yeah, Halo Reach, I suck at that, but I have the same problem as you do. Like, I definitely go to, like, way too far. I had someone comment in my Top Gun video that I was doing that, and it, he was right. But it was like I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gooch, do you have that problem at all, or did you make that transition nicely?
No, I'm practically pro level, so I don't have any issues there. No, yeah, I totally... What's that?
You've never been bad at a game, I forget.
Yeah. No, yeah, I don't have... I have a hard time getting the aiming that I want out of a controller, and that's not to say that I always prefer, you know, a mouse and keyboard, but I can definitely see the advantage. Like, it just depends on the game. Like, Halo... I get by okay, but I feel like I could aim better with a keyboard and mouse. And like Left 4 Dead, for example, we've all played that on PC. I like have to have mouse and keyboard for that game. It is way too frantic. I have to aim too quickly and maybe not precisely, but you know, I just don't get a fire where I want to on the console. Just, I fumble.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I feel like I've run into a lot of the, that same kind of stuff, Dustin. We ran into that with Portal, remember? The first part of the video that we were making, I was with 360 controls.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I could not aim the laser precise enough because even if I would flick the analog stick as lightly as I could, it would give me like an incremental movement to the left. And there was no way for me to be more precise with it. So it was kind of cool. Like Portal actually showed me what PC gamers mean by the controls being so much more precise. So yeah, I guess Dustin, any other thoughts on Halo?
Nah. If you see me, I'm Vogue Nasty. So if you see me on Xbox Live, don't hit me with your shotgun butt.
You get teabagged a lot?
I have, quite often.
Yeah. Well, what are you gonna do? Just respawn. Yeah. I mean, it's Halo. Do you think the fourth Halo is gonna be cool? The new one coming out?
I think it'll be more Halo.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're into Halo, then I think you'll love it. And if you're not into Halo, then it'll be another Halo game. So.
Actually, I think it'll be like that too, which will be a credit to Microsoft because Bungie won't be making it.
Yeah.
So. And then. You've got another one other game up here, man, which is a little...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I picked up Audio Surf because you and I were discussing that would be a good way to showcase some of our musical guests, and I hooked it up and was playing a little bit of some of the random songs throughout my iTunes list, and it's a cool little game.
Yeah, I played it and I bought it too. I've played a couple songs. There's a lot to that game. Have you played through all the different game modes so far?
Are you talking about like the using the different characters?
Oh yeah, I guess yeah, because there's like the easy, medium, and hard. Yeah, and then the different characters have like a whole different like gameplay style, right? Where sometimes you avoid colors, sometimes you jump, sometimes you don't.
I stuck mainly with the mono character.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
I didn't want to, even in the Elite, he's pretty much the same kind of gameplay. It's just, if you use Elite, it goes a lot faster.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I did stick with mono mostly just because I kind of wanted to just kind of have the experience and not try to get into like any kind of, gameplay.
Yeah, I came in. Yeah, I had the same sort of experience. I just wanted to see the visuals and, experience the songs, and it looks great. It's a fun game. Well, guys, I think that we are going to cut away to a quick break. I hear one of my favorite trains coming by to say hi. So I think we're going to be right back after a quick little promo, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what I've been playing, what Gooch has been playing, and roll into the interview.
Hi, my name's Paul Taylor from Mode 7 Games, and you're listening to the Classic Leap Podcast.
All right, Mr. Conductor, we will see you probably in about 20 minutes when we need to take another break. But, Gooch, what have you been playing this week, man?
Well, I've been playing my desk is still standing and so am I. Suck it, everyone who doesn't believe in me.
Oh, I'm sorry, dude. I'm glad that your desk is still standing, so you haven't had to buy a new monitor and your games are still there.
Yeah, everything's fine. Actually, the games were the backup plan. I stuck, because the shelf has no middle support, so I stuck games in the middle.
That's right.
Because it made perfect sense, right? It's my gaming desk, more or less. But yeah, it's still standing. I'm feeling really good. I've had some pretty long, not long, standing sessions, but I don't know, 3, 4, 5 hours.
Jeez.
I know, it's starting to get to me, but, and I admit I did cheat, and I have a kitchen stool, and I grab one of those once or twice.
Well, I mean, it's not healthy to always stand.
Yeah.
You gotta rest a little bit.
Yeah, well, I've been standing while I sleep, so I think that's probably overkill.
Yeah, that's a little overkill.
Yeah. But if I sleep right in front of the toilet, it doesn't matter if I pee in my sleep. I don't know if you guys still have that problem. I'm still working on it.
When I was a kid, I was over at my friend's house, and his Labrador Cola would pee in her sleep, and she'd sleep on her side or her back. And so she would pee across the room, like in her sleep.
What was her name?
Cola.
Oh, okay. I thought you said E. coli.
Oh, no, no, no.
Great name for a dog.
Yeah. Cool. Labrador
E. coli would be a good name for a band, too.
That's, you mentioned, like sleep. I'm actually going to get to that here in a little bit. But yeah, so you've been spending 4 or 5 hours a day gaming, or standing. When you're gaming, is this affecting you? Like, are you fatiguing out?
No. It doesn't bother me so much. I thought it might, but I've been playing a little Final Fantasy XI, which I'll mention, you know, here in a little bit, 10-year-old game. Don't play for 10 hours at a time. That's bad. But it kind of got to me there, and I don't know why. Like, when I'm surfing the internet, I can get up and walk around. Doesn't bother me so much. But when I'm playing a persistent MMO-like game that I can't pause, knowing that I have to, like, stand the whole time kind of gets to me. I think it's all mental. I'll break through it. But it's working out. Like, I'm in this big health kick, you know, and I'm really trying hard by, you know, eating McDonald's cheeseburgers and buying mall pizza.
Yeah.
But that's a rare occasion that happened today. But yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I'm thinking it's good. Like,
do you feel good though doing the standing desk? Like,
yeah, I feel great actually. And it's been good for my back. It's been helping me out. Because I'm trying to get this. I don't have like a gut. But I have something, and I'm trying to mush that down a little bit. And I'm afraid, like, if I come home and just sit in front of the computer for, like, 8 hours a day.
It'll mush the wrong way.
Yeah. And, just total bad mushing going on. I need to mush the correct way. I don't know if you can appropriately mush, but I'm trying.
You can reverse mush by standing.
I had a girl I tried to talk into reverse mushing. Totally did not go where I wanted it to.
Yeah. And that's why we're a single. That's why you're a single guy.
Yeah,
looking for women on a podcast.
Yeah. So anyway, my Facebook. I took that off of there. You know, hobbies, reverse mush, totally not there anymore.
Well, congrats on the desk standing, man. I take back all of the hard time that I gave you, man.
No, it's okay. It looks jacked up. I'll admit it's kind of an odd setup, but it works. And you guys might, you know, might be talking to me here, you know, in a few months and, you know, tell me about your standing desks.
I might.
You might?
If I develop my own standing desk, I will definitely try to one up your, I don't even know how to say it, but it's your MacGyvering. I will make it look even more ridiculous.
Yeah, my ghetto ass furniture hack. That's what you can call it.
The furniture hack. That's right. Oh, good stuff.
But anyway, gaming-wise, though, talking about real games, have you guys heard of that Legend of Grimlock? Or is it Grimrock? I forget.
I think it's Grimrock with an R. Because Grimlock sounds like something Gandalf would say, and I know that's wrong.
Yeah, no, Grimlock is a Transformer. I got it. I'm good. That was the dinosaur Transformer, yeah.
Oh, they should have made that game.
They should have. It would have been amazing. But, yeah.
Grimrock.
Grimrock, yeah. It's a dungeon crawler, like total super old school Dungeon Master style. You're on a grid. You control a party of four people, and it's super basic, super hard, and awesome. Have you guys seen the videos at all?
No.
No. Yeah, it's really neat. I just downloaded it today, and I've been like watching videos and reading reviews and stuff for a long time now, and I just took the plunge. It's $15, PC only, on Steam. I can't wait to, you know, give some real impressions of it, but I bought it, and I'm super pumped. It is so old school. Like, there is a mode that you can enable, and what it does is it takes off the default map to where you would have to like chart out the dungeon that you're exploring on graph paper. So, I don't know if you guys ever played those kind of games. Like, I was in big.
No, I never played that kind of game.
Yeah. Again, why I don't have a girlfriend. So drawing on graph paper, mapping out this dungeon that I'm exploring, you know, and like, I'm really tempted to turn that mode on, but I don't know why. Like, I'm just.
I'm gonna send you some engineering paper for your birthday.
Thank you. Been running low. So I'm pretty pumped about that. I was really excited to pick it up, and hopefully we'll have a video or two up about that.
Yeah, there's lots of like really positive buzz about it.
Yeah, they totally. I think they already made back their investment, you know, in terms of making the game. Like, they've already began making a profit.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so really pumped to check that out. And then I've also been playing a little, and I mean a little, Mass Effect 3. I'm inching towards the ending, so we can begin our 1.5 hour discussion on Mass Effect 3 once again.
I can't wait to be a part of the spoiler cast. Never playing a second of Mass Effect. It'd be great.
I tried to get a hold of DB the other day. Like, I shot him a text because he passed one of his big college, it's not a test, it's like a certification kind of thing. A Praxis test, I think is what it was called.
Oh, Praxis exams. Yeah.
Yeah. So he passed that, and I wanted to congratulate him and find out how far along he's gotten in Mass Effect, but the bastard didn't answer his phone, so.
He still has lost his albino Ben Affleck.
Yeah. I want to know if he's even really played it, or if he's still, mourning over the loss of that.
Well, there's a patch eventually coming out for it, or a fix of some sort, so. Yeah. Eventually he'll be able to get it.
Yeah, but I'm still really enjoying it. Like, I haven't actually had any bad or negative, moments in the game. It's actually been surprising me how much more I enjoy it the more I play.
Maybe it helped you because your expectations like got lowered so much.
Yeah, I'm dead serious. I think that's what happened. I'm like, oh man, this is gonna suck, but it's totally, it's awesome. It's a good game. Like, I would definitely recommend someone play through the trilogy. Because there's not anything really like it. I mean, there are games that play mechanically similar, but not one that continues your story and your choices through in the way this one does. And then, they squash all that with a crappy ending. Makes perfect sense.
It's only the last 20 seconds, like Rooster said, so you're fine.
I know. Need to get him on the show, too, to talk about spoilers.
Yes.
Need to blow it all out. And anyway... last thing I'll ramble about real quick. I reactivated my Final Fantasy XI account because, honestly, and this is, I've lost my damn mind. I don't know what is wrong with me. I'm playing a 10-year-old MMO.
Well, there's other people playing it, right?
There are a ton of people playing it.
So there you go.
Well, the game is fantastic in the way that they've really streamlined a lot of the game since I played back like in 03. And, it's a much easier game to get into. Still not easy by today's standards. Oh. And, I have, hold on a sec.
Okay. So we will be, right back, after a break.
Hello, I am James Kaiser, also known as Retro Kaiser, and you are listening to Classic Leet, one of my favorite podcasts of all time, so you better damn well like it, otherwise I'm going to go in there and rip your bloody arms off.
All right, well, sorry about that. Gooch actually got a pretty important phone call. Nothing to be worried about, but he had to take off unexpectedly. So, Gooch, man, thanks a lot for rambling. We love it. You're the best. And I'm going to ramble here for a little bit. And then we're going to go ahead and roll into our amazing interview with Laura by Sproop. So I guess what I've really been doing is still adding to my my gaming office, my man cave, if you will. And Dustin, I don't think I sent you a picture of this, but I adopted an idea from the Gaming Historian and made a really cool trash can. So, yeah, well, my office, like, as I'm, like, cleaning games or doing stuff, I need a waste bin in there, just like a little one. And I ran to Walmart, and I was looking at the mini, like, desk waste baskets, and I saw one that was all black, and it's almost rectangle. And it jumped into my head, why don't I do what the Gaming Historian did and print off on high quality paper a black box Nintendo cartridge and glue that picture on a black wastebasket, and that way I have a black box NES wastebasket. That idea turned out really, really good. I have a really cool Super Mario Brothers wastebasket in my office now.
Sweet.
So, yeah, I used some Kodak, like, actual photo paper that's, like, real thick, that's got kind of the, even looks like on the back, like, actual, like, proper developed film.
Mm-hmm.
And just a little bit of super glue, and it looks awesome. I used paint.net to kind of sharpen some stuff up, make the image look real nice, and yeah. So I would recommend doing that. And my girlfriend, she saw it, and her initial thought was, well, we could make a whole bunch of cool pictures with this. So she's all about, like, helping me, like, pick out, like, some cool stuff. So, yeah, man, if you're interested in getting some cool artwork up, definitely look at printing some stuff off. It's really, really cool. I know, like, in the interview that our listeners are about to hear, we started talking about the apartment that Laura shot the video in for Armchair Girlfriend. And that guy was lucky enough to work at GameStop for 10 years, so he got, you know, all that residual stuff. But if you're like us, you don't have access to it, print it off. It looks pretty good. Have you done any of that, like, where you've kind of made your own game art?
Not really. I've never had a printer that would do anything high quality.
Yeah, me either. I was just listening. It was either Giant Bombcast or maybe Tested. A recent podcast was talking about a place that allows you to print off arcade cabinet art, but it's on a mini page. So you make little standing models of arcade cabinets.
Huh.
Which I think would be kind of funny to print off and, like, make, like, a Donkey Kong cabinet to, like, put on my desk at work. It'd be kind of funny to have. My boss would be like, so, you're making paper mache at work. Great job. Your desk looks nice. Way to go. So, good stuff. So, yeah, definitely look at, you know, making your own kind of art. Well, Dustin, if your printer takes a crap on you, which printers from the late 90s really are still holding up well, but I spent $60 on one like a month ago, and it prints really high quality images. So,
oh, right on.
Yeah, it won't take you much when you do have to get another one. And I got talked into buying an NES game that is freaking awesome. Have you ever played Cobra Triangle?
Is that the one where you're driving a boat made by Rare?
Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted the gamer has a deal where it's buy three games, get a fourth free. So anytime I'm in there, I always buy chunks of four, and I had Captain Skyhawk, Battletoads, and Dino Ricky in my hand. And I'm looking for a fourth cart, and the guy Matt working there was like, dude, have you played Cobra Triangle? It sounds dumb, and it's a boat, and the cover is a boat being eaten by a dragon.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, you know, I'll take your word for it, whatever. It was a very cheap game, so fine. We'll give it a go. And it's really, really, really good. It starts off as a RC Pro-Am kind of rip-off, and I'm like, all right, I like RC Pro-Am. I can get into this game. And then the next level is, do you remember American Gladiators? The the game where, like, you take a ball and you run and put it in a goal, then you run to the other side of the arena and grab a ball and put it into a goal. Mm-hmm. They do that with a boat race against a computer, kind of. It's the only way I can describe it. And it's really creative and well done. And then there's a particular game that are one that I can't beat, where it's kind of like King of the Hill, protect your territory. Mm-hmm. And I can't beat it, but it's Rare. And Rare was great in the 16-bit and 64 era before they got bought by Microsoft. So, Dustin, that's impressive, man. I'm like, Cobra Triangle. You're like, the boat one by Rare?
Thank you.
I had never heard of the game. So, yeah, impressive, dude.
Actually, I think three of the four games you picked up were Rare games. I'm pretty sure Captain Skyhawk was made by Rare.
Captain Skyhawk was as well? I'll go look. I don't think that one was. I know the Battletoads was for sure. I'll have to look at that. Or I can let you Google it while I am talking about another comparison that I did. Have you ever played Dino Ricky, though? That's a game that I love that is not really that great.
I've heard a lot about it, but I've never played it.
Dino Ricky is the perfect game for showing somebody the difference between an emulator and the real thing. I don't know what it is, but I tried it on an emulator and I hated it. I couldn't play it, and on the NES, it's really, really good. So yeah, Dustin, I've also been playing Sunset Riders, both on the Super Nintendo and the Genesis. And what's interesting is those games are radically different. Very, very different. Level design, the order of bosses, the enemies, the characters that are selectable, but it's clearly still the same game. It's just, it's really, really weird. It's like the SNES version is almost a direct port of the arcade game, and the Genesis version is like, they're like, okay, we have this license, let's reimagine the arcade game. And at first, it seems like it's just due to the limited hardware of the Genesis, because there's more gameplay in the Super Nintendo version, but I don't know, man. I like the Genesis version better. I think because they seem to start from scratch and not worry about a port, the controls are better, in my opinion. They're tighter. They're closer to Contra accuracy and Contra quickness. And the Super Nintendo version, that's just it's a little bit slower, a little more sluggish, and you can't be quite as precise. So if you're a real Twitch Contra gamer like myself, then Genesis controls fit much better. But what's weird is in the normal Super Nintendo and arcade version, you have a normal level that you side-scroll, kind of beat him up through, and then you get to the boss and you beat him. Well, in the Genesis level, or in the Genesis game, each world has two levels. The first one, you rescue a girl at the end, and the second one, then you face the boss. And the level design I actually like a lot better in the Genesis game. The music, sound, graphics are way better in the Super Nintendo version, but the actual gameplay, level design, and controls, I actually have to give it to the Genesis. And being a rational gamer now, it's not very often that, even though I really like the Genesis, it's not often that it beats the Super Nintendo in a game. Mm-hmm. And this one, I think you can make an argument for the Genesis one. I certainly see arguments against it, but you know, there's something about a direct arcade port that I don't really care for. They get a little too repetitive. And, and the Genesis game just doesn't do that, which is cool. So, Dustin also, and I'm really bummed that Gooch isn't going to be around for this because I wanted to go off on a little bit of a tangent to get some advice. But I think I'm going to need some sort of a game that's going to make me sleepy because, So I am a bad sleeper. I think I've got sleep apnea, so I'm going and getting like one of those like crazy sleep tests done, where like I go stay overnight and they like hook me up to machines and do all that kind of stuff. So part of what I do is I go in at like 8:30 at night. That's weird because they're like, "What time do you like to go to bed?" And they're like, "Well, I shoot for 11. I'm here for sleeping issues, so clearly I don't go to sleep at 11." But, you know, that's my target or whatever. So they're like, okay, we'll bring some stuff to, like, kill some time. So I'm going to be in, like, this mini hospital room, basically. And I need to kill some time before I I'm ready to go to sleep. And then I have to, like, tell them, like, okay, I'm going to sleep now. It's hooked me up to machines. So what's a game, a system? I've got my laptop available. I have a DS with an R4 cart, and I've got my 3DS. So help me. What sort of games do you think I should gear up to take that'll maybe put me to sleep a little bit?
I would suggest any kind of turn-based RPG. You're already not a fan of those, so those will help. Which
yeah, that one's going to be tough. What about maybe...
puzzle games?
Yeah, puzzle games. Are there any puzzle games that you've played PC or anything like that that you'd recommend?
Let's see. Potion Master from our...
You know what? Potion Master would be a good one. I will check that out.
Let's see. Tetris. You got a DS, 3DS.
Yeah, yeah.
Pushmo.
Yes, of course, some puzzle games like that. What about... You know, I would be... Not a turn-based RPG, but what's maybe an action or like a... More of a Zelda type, hack and slash type of an RPG I could maybe get into. 16-bit.
There's Chrono Trigger on... Well, no, that's still turn-based. There's all kinds of... I'm sure you can download all kinds of Legend of Zelda off 3DS.
Yeah, maybe a Legend of Zelda. You know what? My old Game Boy. I've got Link's Awakening and stuff, so...
There you go. Okay. You have to buy it.
Yeah, so I've got... Okay, well, I'll stick with some puzzle games, and I'll look for a bit of an RPG thing, but have you ever been through a sleeping test like that before? With, like, the military or anything? No?
I've fallen asleep playing a video game before.
You have? Which one was it?
It was Metal Gear Solid 2.
Okay, don't have access to play that.
I was playing to get through... I had a guard shift I had to pull 24 hours straight, so I figured I'd play some games. Which may or may not have been allowed at the time. But I got to one of the famous 30-minute cutscenes, and I didn't make it through it. All of a sudden, I woke up, and it was like at this kind of a safe zone for where Raiden was just standing waiting for me to move him.
Did you miss any like content or anything?
Yeah. I think it was spoiler alert if anyone hasn't played Metal Gear Solid. It's the point where you fight right after Vamp kills Otacon's sister, and it was during that cutscene I was watching it, I think, and next thing I knew I woke up and it was time for me to
keep protecting the country.
Yeah.
Good deal. Well, maybe I'll look into trying to figure out a way to get some Metal Gear in the sleep room with me, but it's just crazy. Like, they took me to like the technician like area to show me like the computer rigs and all that they have. It's just crazy. So I'm actually like strangely like looking forward to it because it's so technical. It's just like, it's wild. And then like to get the results of how you actually sleep, I'm really interested to see that because I speculate, you know, we all say that we sleep certain ways, but to actually find out, it's going to be pretty cool. So
have you ever played Peggle?
No, but I've heard good things about it.
Peggle's fun.
Maybe I should do Peggle.
It's kind of passive. You just pretty much fire the ball and wait for it to do its thing.
There was, what was that game where you'd shoot like little viruses kind of like Peggle? That was really popular a couple years ago. Or like right as we were graduating high school. Crap, I can't remember what it's called now. Oh, well, but it's similar to Peggle, where you, like, shoot an item, and you, like, ricochet whatever you shoot into a match 3 or match 4 scenario, something like that. So, all right, well, everybody, that's it for what I've been doing gaming. So, it is time for us to talk about, or not talk about, but actually get to the interview with Laura by Spruik. So we want to thank Laura and Bill very much for coming on, and want to encourage everyone to support their stuff. They're rockers that have video game influences. That's really, really cool stuff. So here's the interview, and then we'll be right back with some YouTube highlights and an amazing segment of fan mail.
Hey,
All right, everyone, and we are back with our interview segment. We're featuring Laura by Spruik, and we have the musical duo Laura Deemer and Bill Bowden on the show. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, awesome. Well, a lot of our listeners are probably pretty familiar with Laura by Spruik already. I did a review of their album Katana and Tonic. And then, Bill, you're pretty well known in the nerd circles with your music with Spruik and the Gathering rap album with Magic the Gathering. And Laura, you've got some other musical projects in the work too, don't you?
No, I think Laura by Spruik is my first one.
Is it? Okay.
Yes.
Awesome.
I have been in a few local bands, but, you know, that's just regular kind of high school stuff.
Okay, fair enough. But you've gotten into some producing video, which is cool. We'll get to that in a little bit. The big reason that we wanted to bring Laura by Spruik on is they're a rock band that is really heavily influenced with video games as well as real life. And today they released their video for the song Armchair Girlfriend. So we want to thank you guys very much for coming on. And Dustin, let's go ahead and get rolling with the interview.
All right, sounds good. Laura, can you give us a history of how Laura by Spruik started and the style of music you guys make?
Absolutely. Bill and I actually were coworkers in the office up in Buffalo, and I was a receptionist. He was working in IT, and we got to be really good friends because he introduced me to his first Spruik album that I really enjoyed. So we got to talking and became really great friends over the few years that we worked together. And then last August, he came in one day just out of the blue, and he was like, I want to make like a bitch rock punk album, and I want you to sing for it. And then after he like 0.5 seconds of careful consideration, I was like, hell yes. So it just happened. He that night went home and wrote the riffs for what would become I Hate and Sonic, and he showed them to me, and I was madly in love with the sound. So we just decided that, given our both very nerdy video game backgrounds, that we would just write this character who is just like this party girl, you know, drinking Jack and Scotch, double fisting, but kicking your ass at Super Smash Brothers.
Sweet. Today you released Armchair Girlfriend, the video for it, and you produced it. So the song and video have so many good game references. Can you talk about just making the video?
Yes. We have this really great friend, Dantendo. Huge shout out to him. He lent us his apartment. He worked at GameStop for the last 10 years. So he got all the memorabilia from all the different games that came out and just decorated his entire living room in the splendor of those games. So when we thought of a place to film the video, we couldn't think of any better place than his apartment. So he lent it to us for an afternoon. That's where you see the shots where it's more dancing around the armchair in the center of the room and wearing like the black top and stuff like that. And that's where the Master Sword was and all this other great memorabilia, the Duke Nukem poster stand-up thing, cardboard cutout. And after that, we got some really good footage, but the tone of the video was a little bit too sexualized. So after making the first cut, I realized that wasn't exactly what I was going for. I wanted to have more fun with it. So then I picked another location and filmed. That's where you see the shots of the Batman shirt. And, you know, we created like the really psychedelic lights, and then I upped the contrast amazingly. So that you have that really great, lush kind of video gamey feel of the video.
No, that's awesome. And Bill, the cool thing about this video is Laura kept it from you, right, during the production? Like, you just saw it today as well.
Yeah, we've worked on all my videos in the past together. But for Armchair, she said, I've kind of got some ideas for this one. Can I handle this one on my own? I want to talk to a few girlfriends, get some girls involved, and just kind of make it an all-female production. I said, that's, you know, that's fine with me. I have a lot of trust in you. Surprise me. And so my sister, and her friend Christina, they all sort of went off, did it on their own. And then the first I saw it was just yesterday when she ran a preliminary cut by me. She came and she says, all right, here's what we made. I'm like, whoa, I mean, like, hey, I'm having a funny time seeing my friend this way. But I'm like, this is professional. The colors are great. It's lush. It's like almost like a fantasy of the girl next door landscape, which is just what the song was supposed to be about. I'm like, really nailed it. And the video game Easter eggs just run so deep. Like, I was having fun noticing them all, from the Pokeballs to the Fallout lunchbox to all these other things.
My, I mean, my The item that stood out to me that made me the most jealous was right in the beginning when you have the hanging Nintendo neon sign.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever that thing was, that, oh my gosh.
I know.
That would be awesome. That's really cool. Now, Bill, you've been a musician for quite a while, correct?
Oh, yeah, for a decade or more.
And so now, since you did most of the musical production on the album, can you talk to me a little bit about the ways that video game influenced the actual music production?
Sure. I think that having been such a gamer my whole life, I sort of got really internalized with the video game school of writing music. I'm not really sure how to explain it, but there's a rock pop way to write songs that I never really internalized, that sort of verse chorus, play three chords kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I really grew up playing, you know, Final Fantasy VI, Chrono Trigger, Mario, and I learned just a different school of what music sounded like. So that's really been inside me the whole time, but I, you know, learned to recognize it, draw it out, and push it to the max for this album. In a lot of songs, I knew what I was able to draw on for that. For instance, you're familiar with the track Easy, which
yes.
is supposed to be, you know, a song about regretting a morning after. And I knew I need game over music. And, you know, for having played so many games my whole life, I knew exactly what it should sound like when your last life ticks down to zero and you just get that dreaded screen. You know, that I was able to bring all those things out of a lifetime of experience for this. It comes down to the chords, but also the sounds. You know, there's fun chiptune sounds, and there's sad chiptune sounds. And
yeah.
really learning how to balance them in this album was great.
So do you think that it sounds to me like the 16-bit genre may have maybe been the most influential for you with this album?
I think the way that broke down is that the mentality of the 16-bit genre was what informed the music, but the sounds are really drawn from 8-bit.
Okay.
I feel like it's actually kind of tough to make music, like chiptunes, that draw on the 16-bit era, because that was when soundtracks were able to make use of the full general MIDI sound set. You know, like Final Fantasy SNES games were able to make full use of strings, choir sounds, so it actually just sounds like you're using an old Casio.
Oh, okay.
To really drive home that chiptune sound, you have to use those 8-bit square waves.
Cool.
So the sounds are 8-bit, but the way they're written, the flourishes, is very much 16-bit informed in attitude.
Very cool. Well, Laura, did you do most of the lyrical work then?
No, actually. What Bill would do is he wrote a great majority of the songs, I think. And what he would do is, if he wanted any sort of influence in style, or he would message me and be like, you know, all of these songs are basically one tiny little bit of truth and then extrapolated to this huge metaphor or written into this character and taken to a degree where that almost all the truth is lost.
Okay.
So he would ask for an experience in the past, and I would tell him something, and then he would just take a completely different, revolutionized look at it and help create the lyrics. And he would definitely ask for my help in lyrics. We would work on this Google document together and just kind of write lyrics while we were both at the day job and just kind of figure out what it was that we were wanting. And he had this really great style that it was easy for me to think of what I wanted to say. And even if I couldn't get it in the correct style of rhyming or rhythm, I would tell my basic thought, and he would just immediately just line it right up and put it in the document in the way that it's supposed to sound, which is great.
Cool. So how would you describe, I guess, a little bit more deeper of the theme of the album, more than just this angsty girl who can party a little bit? There's a little more depth to the character. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I think what you see a lot now on the internet and in just people in general these days is, you know, the whole Occupy Wall Street, I guess, the whole college crash where everyone goes to college now because we were all told it's going to be this great thing, your life is going to open up for you, and then we're still working the same 9-to-5 jobs just with debt. And I think it's all that, all these expectations of how life is going to be great, how, you know, you start out in the video game and everything is all bright and sunny, and then things take a turn and you just realize, you know, it's not all that it was cracked up to be, sex isn't all it's cracked up to be, partying isn't. And you've just got to make your own perspective and just forge your own way regardless.
Very cool. That's a very interesting perspective for video game themed music, or a game in music inspired with video games. You don't see it incorporated as much of in a real world setting where it's just part of your life. Usually people take it one direction or the other, where they do only something about video games, or it has nothing to do with video games. So it's really cool that you guys took that perspective on the album.
One thing I was trying to not repeat was I've seen a lot, I mean, there's a lot of video game music out there, but when it's lyrical, a lot of the times I feel like there's this mentality when people say, I'm going to make a song about Zelda, then the lyrics wind up being like, yo, 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 it's the Triforce or something. Like, you're just going to make it about that. And one thing I'd learned from my Magic the Gathering project was I never came out and just said a bunch of card names. I talked about what it was like to have a life built around Magic the Gathering. And I really took that lesson and how people connected with it to this project for me and Laura, where it's we've clearly got a gamer character. There's gamer Easter egg references hidden in every song, and it's framed from the mentality of a gamer, but we're not there to say, hey, I'm going to name off every character in Final Fantasy IV. It's about life, just informed by that mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really, really cool.
And this one, this is directed at both of you guys. What is one game you think gave you the most inspiration, or is there one game that was at the forefront of your mind while making Katana and Tonic?
I mean, it's clearly Chrono Trigger. It should come as no surprise, given that we went on to do the Corridors of Time bonus track at the end. I didn't even realize when I was coming up with the name Katana and Tonic, I was trying to think of something that sounded like what a video game protagonist would drink as a mixed drink to bring together the themes of video games and partying. I'm like, oh, thinking gin and tonic, and you know, the hero is always like some bright-faced young boy with a sword, Katana and Tonic. And then it turns out that if you Google Katana and Tonic, the first couple results are Chrono Trigger inventory descriptions.
No way!
Before our album. And I just realized, wow, I actually just, that's how deeply the game was ingrained into this project.
Whoa.
I know Laura, though, was not as informed by that. She has a couple games of her own that really brought her perspective to this project.
Yes, Bill, he had more of the Chrono Trigger, more of the Final Fantasy side, and I've only played Chrono Trigger on a emulator. I've never actually, you know, like, had the system and played the game, and I'm more informed by the Nintendo 64 aspect, which is why, you know, I chose a Nintendo 64 controller in the music video, because that's my jam. You know, the Smash Brothers, the Mario Kart, the Legend of Zelda 64, Ocarina of Time, is my favorite game of all time. I have it tattooed on my shoulder.
The last good Zelda game came out in 98, right?
Right, yeah.
Come on, Majora's Mask came out in 2000. I like that game.
All my friends like Majora's Mask better. You know what? That's a good
game. I like it too. I don't know. It's like splitting hairs with me. I really have a hard time finding a Zelda that I didn't really like a lot.
It's true. It really is. But I was more informed by the 64 kind of games, and I feel like that kind of attitude where the 64, you know, it's bigger, it's better, it's brighter than its counterparts. And I feel like, you know, I liked the GameCube, I liked what Nintendo did after the 64, but the 64 is always going to be golden era in my heart, so.
Very cool. What have you been playing lately?
I've been playing a lot of Mass Effect. I was really sad. I tried to bang Miranda, and my character's a girl. And you know what? BioWare didn't allow that.
So. We'll start a new petition.
Right, I know. Well, yeah. In Mass Effect 3, you can apparently do the homosexual relationships, but it's, you know, Mass Effect 3, I feel, is kind of a letdown in storyline.
Yeah, I haven't really played any of the series. Which one are you playing that they're not?
Oh, I'm
is
playing
it one?
The second one.
Okay, you're in two.
Yeah.
Good deal. What? Anything else? Have you been playing any 64 since the release of the song today?
Well, I'm actually rebooting the 64 emulator to be playing Ocarina of Time, or I haven't figured out if I'll play that or Donkey Kong 64, because that's a real good one.
Nice.
Yeah.
I just picked up Donkey Kong 64 a couple weeks ago. I had never owned it before. It's.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you're in for a treat.
It's awesome. I like it so far. Bill, what about you? What have you been playing, man?
I've got a recurring Tuesday night Gears of War League going, which is a lot of fun. Been playing a lot of Gears of War 3. I've been playing Arkham City, which I like a lot. I actually was not enamored with Skyrim. I liked it, but it got repetitive too fast for me.
I agree.
I've been going back and reliving my childhood greats in the emulator lately. Got through Chrono Trigger about 2 months ago, Final Fantasy VI about a month ago, and I'm probably getting into either Secret of Mana or Earthbound next. Not entirely sure which. Nice. Been playing some mini-games. Really enamored with Bastion. I think
isn't that game so good?
It really is. The innovative mechanic with the narrator. And they couldn't have picked a better guy to be the narrator for that game. He's just got this great, slightly southern, like, campfire whiskey, two-pack-a-day kind of voice.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, man.
He's like Morgan Freeman level, like, awesome. It's just a really rich... it's almost like if you heard somebody in real life sound like that, you would be taken back anyways. Like, oh my god, people really sound like that in real life?
Absolutely. Not to mention whoever they have writing his material, they managed to go with so many awesome little truisms. I feel like you come up with them off the top of your head, but, you know, kid trying to fight hard, but he couldn't fight hard enough.
Yeah.
In that format is just great. And then, I actually was holding out on Mass Effect 3 because I've just heard so much, and I like to not ride the wave if I can help it, but Amazon just dropped the price yesterday to $40. Now I have no excuse. Ordered it yesterday. I'll be in that soon.
Nice.
And Diablo 3, you guys. Hey.
I know. It was funny. At work today, I'm getting coffee, and this girl comes into the cafeteria and starts giving the other guy in the cafeteria a real hard time. She's like, I just lost my boyfriend. And I'm like, oh man, like I'm here in a really awkward situation. And he just starts apologizing. And come to find out, he gave her boyfriend the Diablo 3 beta. So she's looking at me and I'm like, I'm kind of on his side on this one. I'm sorry.
Oh, that is crap. Any girl should just pick up her own controller and play her game.
Well, she actually ended up liking it because she had a backlog of what she called her girly shows on the DVR.
Oh, that's good.
That he can't stand to watch. So it was kind of like part of ways, they go do their thing and then they can come back. So
that's good.
Good compromise, right?
Yeah.
Well, guys, that's all the questions that we have for you. We want to thank you very much for coming on the show. But, Bill, we want to give you a chance to let everybody know where to check out Lore by Spruik. Yourself, Spruik, The Gathering, all that fun stuff.
Awesome. I do have a YouTube channel. That's my main method of interaction right now, which is youtube.com/user/Spruik. Everything goes up there, including the classic Spruik, the new dubstep I'm working on, the Lore by Spruik, and the MTG stuff at The Gathering. I have a SoundCloud, which is soundcloud.com/Spruik. I am on Twitter and very active as @TheGathering. Spelled wrong, of course, because I'm hardcore like that.
Yes.
And there is a Facebook page, Spruik Recordings. That's about all the places you can find me online. The album is also on iTunes. It is on Spotify for streaming. It is on Amazon, and it is on CD Baby. It is coming soon to Pandora. It got approved, but it takes them about 3 or 4 months to add it. And that's everything on my end. Laura, where can they find you?
I have a website that desperately lacks updates, lauradiemer.com, and that's D-I-E-M as in Mary E-R. And I'm also on Twitter as Laura G. Diemer, and I'm also pretty active there. I will basically talk with anyone. I'm super friendly, so don't be scared.
Very cool. Well, guys, thank you very much again for coming on. We want to encourage everybody to check out their album. You can listen to it on YouTube, and if you like it, go to Amazon and buy it. And we will be right back with some more stuff on episode 86. And we are back. Thanks again, Laura and Bill. You guys are fantastic, and we hope that our listeners enjoyed some of the music. And we'll be outroing this episode with some Lore by Spruik as well. So, Dustin, let's get into some YouTube highlights, then listener comments, and then we'll close out the episode.
Sounds good.
So, what's our roll call the last couple weeks with our YouTube channel?
All right, so over the past 10 days or so, we've had, let's see, I put up my Cannonball gameplay review.
Yep.
We had a Burnout Crash review. And
for the iOS, which is interesting. It's a really weird, kind of quirky take on Burnout.
Yeah. It's kind of weird because the Crash used to be like one of the big modes, and they took it out for Paradise, and people got all up in arms. Now they've taken it and kind of butchered it on, well, I won't say butchered, but they've taken it and changed it quite considerably and put it on iOS. So
it's just weird.
Yeah.
It looks like a concept game almost. Like, if we had Micro Machine Burnouts, we'd do something like this. So,
speaking of iOS, he also did Max Payne Mobile.
Yeah, which is, I think that's just a direct port of one of the first, is it the first one?
Yeah.
That came out on PS2? Okay.
Yeah, it looks like it controls really well. When I saw that, I honestly, when I saw that they were releasing Max Payne on mobile devices, I laughed. But after hearing the review and seeing the gameplay, then it looks like they did a really good job.
Tony's adapted himself pretty well to touch controls, but he seemed to not feel like he was giving it the benefit of the doubt. He seemed to actually have no problems with the controls.
Right. And for those who don't know, we got a device that allows Tony to record directly from his iPad. So it's not a camera recording his iPad. It's the actual footage from the device.
Yeah, which is fantastic. So you don't see his hands in the way or anything like that. You see little blips on the screen of where he touched, so you can see the action or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. I forget the name of the product, though. We'll bring it up next week.
Yeah.
It's amazing, though. He also, my favorite review so far he's done recently with iOS is that Sketch Nation Studio.
Yeah.
It looks really neat. So it's kind of a hard thing for us to talk about on the podcast, but we just want to encourage you to check out Sketch Nation Studio. It's an app that lets you make an app. So if you have an idea for a game or functionality or something, you can make an app with this app, so you don't need to know programming or anything like that. It's really, really neat. So check that out. And Dustin, you put up a Shank 2 review. We talked about Shank a little earlier. Let's see here. Okay. And then I did a Fez review, which I'm disappointed in now, because I only talked about the gameplay and not how in-depth it is. But you can check that out. The review that I did of Fez really gives you just a look at the gameplay style, the mechanics, a little bit of the rules of the game, some of the Easter eggs, and what my initial impressions were, but now I know that there's a whole other game left that I need to get to, so I feel a little embarrassed by that review. Oh well, what are you going to do?
Yeah. And lastly, I put up another episode, our second episode of Classic Leet News.
Yes.
And I covered SSX DLC. Max Payne 3 is going to have a digital comic that is going to lead up to the release of Max Payne 3 here on the 15th of May. And also there was a Star Trek video game teaser trailer released at Namco Bandai's Global Gamers Day. And
like a console game or like another MMO kind of thing?
It looks to be like a console single player campaign-ish kind of game.
Like over the shoulder third person, like set your phasers to stun and go?
It actually looks remarkably like Mass Effect 3.
Really?
Yeah, which is kind of funny. But it uses the actors from the J.J. Abrams reboot or reimagining.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
I love
so
that
it
movie.
Has the guy who played Siler as Spock. So yeah. I'm thinking there's going to be some like co-op.
Okay. Oh, that would be cool. Well, we'll keep an eye out for that because if we can do some co-op, considering the we're not giant. I know Tony's a giant Star Trek fan. Are you a real big Trek guy?
I'm not. I'm a big fan of Tribbles, but
of what?
Tribbles.
What's that?
It's this weird alien thing that actually I'm gonna diverge totally on this, but there's a. An old Star Trek episode called The Trouble with Tribbles. And okay. There are these little fuzzballs that invade the Star Trek Enterprise, if I remember correctly. I haven't seen it since literally the late 80s. And there's like these little fuzzballs that are featureless. They don't have like eyes or nose or mouth or anything. And they like replicate, and reproduce like super fast. So you end up like with all these, you get one on your ship and you end up with like thousands of them in the ship, and they have to find a way to get rid of them. And, whenever we saw this, episode, my whole family was watching it, and it was about the same time that we started playing video games, and any time that we ran into slimes in a game, we called them tribbles.
Oh, okay.
So, specifically in, like, The Adventure of Link, whenever those slimes, because they looked exactly like the tribbles. So, but to answer your question, I'm not that big a fan of Star Trek.
I like the original series. I watched the whole first season. I haven't seen seasons two or three. I watched it because my parents, they were big Star Trek fans, and they really enjoyed the reboot that came out a couple years ago. And they said, if you watch the original series, it adds to the movie because they do a really good job of making it feel like a prequel to that, to the series coming up. So I started getting into it and watching it, and I really understand why people like that show so much. It's the productions. It's funny. It's like watching a play. So once you get into just the way things look, I like it. I totally understand why people went nuts over it. I will try that out. This Mass Effect 3 version of Star Trek.
Yeah. The full teaser trailer is in the episode.
Dude, yeah, because if there's campaign, like, that would be awesome.
Yeah. And we actually, I end the video talking about our idea to start streaming regularly. So if you are interested in seeing that at all, definitely go to our YouTube channel and leave comments, give us suggestions on what you would possibly want to see, when you would want to see it, you know, anything off the top of your head.
That'd be sweet. Yeah, I'm definitely down for the live streaming. If someone wants to watch us play video games. Heck yeah. That'd be awesome. Well, good deal, man. Is there anything else that we need to cover with YouTube before we get to our listener comments?
I was going to hit up the Hapaw Gaming Zone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm so sorry, dude. I've got to put that on the notes. I forget that every week.
let's see. We got Trials Evolution gameplay, which is the sequel to Trials HD, which I think came out today, actually. Yeah.
You've got to be jazzed about that.
I am, I wish I had more time to put, well, I wish I had more time to put into every video game, but I wish I had more time to put into, Trials HD, because I'd like to finish that up before moving to Evolution, because I don't know that I would want to go backwards after playing Evolution, because it looks like it really fleshes out the concept.
I mean, screw it, just move on.
Yeah, that's true. let's see, we also got Need for Speed the Run, first 10 minutes on the Paw Gaming Zone channel, Modern Warfare 3, more people shooting each other, and Sniper Elite V2 demo. Have you seen that at all?
No. Well, I just little quips of it. I have no idea what it is, though.
It's a game based on snipers, obviously, in World War II, and every time, every time you fire a shot, if you hit like a long range headshot, it will go into slow mo and like show this bullet punching its way through somebody's head in like X-ray vision. It was actually a pretty epic Game Informer did a first look on the demo, and there was this sniper versus sniper battle, and it ended with the guy shooting at the sniper and putting a bullet through both of his testicles.
Oh. So they show the bullet go through the balls?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. So now, does the gameplay look fun? Does it just look like it would be just strictly a gimmick where you just try to get a kill just so you can watch the animation? Or does it look like it's actually fun, too?
A pretty proper game. It's a very, it's kind of a realistic take on, the idea of being a sniper, where you're this one guy and you kind of have to work your way to get to the target, but you can't run and gun the entire time. You have the option of like throwing rocks to distract guards. You have your Springfield, which is your sniper rifle, and you have a submachine gun in the form of a Thompson, and you have a silenced pen, I almost said silenced pencil, a silenced pistol, and the everything but your rifle has very limited ammunition. So the game is very much based, well, at least the demo that I played was very much based on get to where you need to be to hit the guy that you need to hit and be very cautious about what firefights you get into, because you will get, it's definitely not a Call of Duty where you're, you know, killing 50 dudes a minute.
That's cool. It seems like this style of game is just sort of a matter of time. I'm surprised it's taken this long to come out, because I mean, since Halo 1, I mean, there's always been dudes that just love sniping. That's just their favorite gameplay. They're really good at it. That's what they love to do. So I guess I'm just surprised it took this long to get this all going, but it's really interesting. And I love the sound of that animation. That's cool. Yeah.
I think it's going to be one of those that are, it's going to be awesome to look at the videos.
The YouTube videos? Yeah.
Yeah. The holy crap, I can't believe this happened kind of videos.
Sweet. Well, awesome, man. Is there anything else that we should get to before we get to our listener comments?
I think that's it.
All right. Nice. Well, first we have two comments from Twin Sword Trading, or Kaylee, and also we've got a comment from Keith over at Pixel Nation. Twin Sword Trading and Kaylee just said, you know, thanks for the episode and for promoting their stuff, and Pixel Nation said the same thing.
Yeah.
Just want to let people know, like, absolutely, twinswordtrading.bigcartel.com. We've got some really cool stuff, and Lewis said that he's going to send a few prints over to Classic Leads Away, so I'm really excited to see what they sent over. You did not have to do that, Lewis, so we're very excited about that. And Pixel Nation just... I'm floored with what they've been doing, and it's funny because they're a little taken back by the feedback. Like, they're overwhelmed with how awesome everybody thinks that the stuff is, and I don't know, if you look at the PDF, it's crazy. It looks like what you expected Nintendo Powers to look like as a kid. It's just, yeah. It's awesome. So, everybody go check that stuff out. And, Dustin, I'm gonna let you read British Steel's comment, before we get to that. We have somebody that I don't think that they have written the show before. Josh Story left a comment on our site, and it turns out, Dustin, you actually can change the ringtones of an iPhone. He gave a link here at demogeek.com, a article, how to add custom ringtones to your iPhone. He also says that you can usually find complications or compilations for your ringtone sets with Google searches. He actually found a Sonic Get Ring Sounds, which is awesome for like his text messages and stuff.
Yeah.
I use PhoneZoo.com because they've got editing like in the software, so you upload the song and you can cut out the waveform of exactly what you want and then upload it, and it saves there. And you can send it to your phone directly as a text message or anybody that you want, or you can share it to the community. So PhoneZoo is what I use for that.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. But yeah, so you can actually change your ringtones with an iPhone, but I do need to point out that it took a article from Demo Geek to explain how. So, you still go with the Android. But no, Josh, seriously, thank you very much for writing in and commenting. That's very, very cool, and thank you for adding to the show. So anybody last week that got bummed out because we, you know, informed you of inaccurate information on your iPhone, go change those ringtones right now. But yeah, we finally heard from British Steel again.
Which finally. I'm
excited about. Yes, he's alive. Exciting.
I'm so happy to have you back.
Seriously, I really am, because I've been all excited about the music, and then he drops off. And I'm like, what the heck? He's one listener that I thought was really digging the music. So I'm glad he's back.
And he writes in and says, I also have the codec ring for my text messages. Unfortunately, nobody I see in daily life understands it because all of my gamer friends from school moved away from home to find work, including myself.
Are you there?
The NES Super Mario release debate is complicated by one major detail that most people are unaware of. Understand that it was only available in a few key test markets like New York City in 1985. The test market success is what led to it being available to the rest of the country in 1986 with the packed-in Super Mario game. On that note, I suggest an excellent book called Game Over by author David Sheff. It talks about the video game market from Nintendo's card game days to the mid-90s and the really ugly business infighting that consumers of any industry seldom see. It's not some anti-video game smear story that one would think based on the title, but a pretty neutral history book. I really want to look that up because I think that would be super interesting to just be able to get just basic history on the industry as it was.
Oh my gosh, yeah. When I saw this comment come through, I immediately started looking at it. I will own and read this game. Yeah. I'm going to read Ready Player One first, but then I'm going to read this one next.
Bridge still continues to say, there are a lot of things related to Atari, Sega, the history of Tetris, and other gaming subject as well. That's where I read about the 1985 test market release. I was a little confused. That sentence was talking about the Game Over book. So there's also stuff related to Atari, Sega, and Tetris in game.
Yeah. It's not just Nintendo.
Finally, I still really dig the 8-bit chiptunes, especially the outro. Never quit broadcasting those.
Deal.
See,
I love it.
Have you heard anything about Tetris, like the whole Alexei Pajitnov and
what? Oh my gosh, yes, that is so cool. Let's talk about that a little bit. So, my understanding is the creator of Tetris, the Russian guy, right? Didn't he allow the rights to be made with one company? Because there is a Tengen cart that's Tetris, and there's an NES cart. And the Tengen one's very rare and is, most people say, a better game because there's different modes and graphics and stuff. But I believe that what had happened was Tengen and Nintendo both had what looked like legitimate claims for the copyright to Tetris here in the States, I think. And the courts ruled in favor of Nintendo, which then led to it being the pack-in for the Game Boy, and then it being available retail for the NES. But then I believe that the Tengen cart was not allowed to be produced after the judgment. I think that's how, and that's why that's rare. I think that's how it works. So that's very, very interesting because that's insanely murky. How they shook down who actually got the rights is crazy.
And just like the business processes with was the Soviet Union still at the time? How they had Hank Rogers, I think at the time, was I'm just talking like I don't know what I'm talking about. I guess I shouldn't try to recount this from memory.
Either way, if you're interested in the subject, both doing a bad job of recounting the story, but it's clearly fascinating enough to check out. So go to Wikipedia or Google an article. It's really cool. There's YouTube videos about it. I've watched something on this. That's how I knew about it. Like,
was it Gaming Historian?
Maybe it was. Maybe it was. It's definitely a subject that Norm would be able to do, so we'll Google it because I watched something on it and that's how I got my information. So we'll try to post some sort of information about the Tetris history and it coming to the NES and all that kind of stuff. So, well, Dustin, any other comments about the episode or anything this week?
This was a good one.
It was kind of crazy, but a lot of fun again.
Yeah.
Just thank you very much to Bill and Laura again. Love your music. Love seeing musicians that are gamers getting out there and showing that it's just part of who we are, not what we are, kind of a thing. I really like that. That theme that they have throughout the album is really good. So, Well, yep, Gooch, we hope everything is okay with the logistics of the riot situation that you're dealing with right now. We hope all that works out. And we just want to remind everybody real quick to check out everything over at doghousesystems.com. Time to level up. If you're into PC gaming, they've got a really good PC gaming podcast, so definitely give that a listen. A big thank you to Aver Media and Hapog, as well as you can check us out on various sites. G2PO is our big one. Is our new favorite right now. It's just a really, really organized community. I really like the way that they're doing things over there. Big thank you to Got Game, Gamefire, Glitched Out, and Review Zone HD. Also, you can check us out on the Yoush forums. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and we will see you next week-ish for episode 87.